Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Shadow Talk powered by ReliaQuest. We're coming to you from RSA Conference, the South Hall, S435, if you're interested in finding us. But this is actually a first for us. We're broadcasting from the RSA floor. You might hear some background noise. We actually have a happy hour going on right outside the door. It looks like tons of customers and tons of prospects out there. So it looks like everybody's having a good time on the day one. We have some new voices on the podcast, probably ones that we should have on from time to time as well. But I'll start off with, to my left, Jason, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Jason Pfeiffer, I'm the Chief Strategy Officer for ReliaQuest.
And then Joe?
Yeah, Joe Partlow, CTO at ReliaQuest. First time on.
First time, long time.
Exactly.
Long time listener, first time caller.
So I don't know if you guys agree or not, but I do feel like for RSA last year did not feel like this. This feels like pre-pandemic RSA to me.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is packed.
I think this is like my 14th RSA, and I think it's kind of back to those pre-pandemic levels. People are out. People are excited. People are like actively wanting to be around other people again and like packing the show floor. A lot of good conversations. A lot of people traveling again, which is great. It's just great to see everybody again.
Yeah, definitely something I've noticed walking the floor, just the energy level. You know, people's booths are more lively. There's a lot of things going on in the booth. So, yeah, I think it's back better, I think, than it was pre-pandemic.
I do think I heard someone say last year the number was like 25,000 people, and it felt visibly less when you walked around the streets of Moscone and when you walked around the expo floors, both halls. I've heard numbers between 45,000 and 53,000 here this year, so quite a stark difference if those are the right numbers.
Yeah, that's about the same numbers I've heard as well, and it shows. I mean, there's a lot of people in the streets. There's a lot of people out at night. There's a lot of people in the meeting spaces and the conference floors. So it's good to have everybody back.
What I'm curious. I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so this will air probably on Wednesday or something along those lines. So I know we still have more conference left, and there's more things to see. But JP, what are the observations you're seeing? You're talking to a lot of customers and prospects. You're seeing the floor. What are some of the trends that you see?
You know, it's interesting, right? I mean, I think we see from the customer perspective, you know, people trying to figure out which is best and trying to figure out. Looking through all the noise of the different vendors, like what is the right product for them? How do they solve their unique challenges? I don't think their challenges have changed all that much. We hear a lot about cloud, securing the cloud, multi-cloud environments. How do I get visibility in the cloud? How does that tie into my overall strategy and hybrid, things of that nature? Hear a lot of that. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say it. I'm not going to steal Joe's thunder. You know, he's one of the experts in this area, but you know, we're hearing the AI chatter a lot, you know, the ChatGPT, how that's playing in. And interesting, you know, Rick and you and I were talking about earlier with another customer. It was like, how do they protect themselves from like ChatGPT and what their customers or what their internal users are doing with ChatGPT? So I think it's an interesting realm of like, someone mentioned it. I think you said it, Rick, was like DLP for ChatGPT. And I kind of thought DLP was dead or was dying. And maybe ChatGPT is going to bring it back.
Yeah, DLP has been like a four-letter word for like I deployed DLP in a university endpoint DLP, and well, that was a mess to be responsible for. Well, we're going to get into the AI stuff with Joe GPT here in a little while. I do agree with, and you can, as I'm looking on the floor now, there's like logos everywhere, signage. It is difficult, especially being a CISO and a buyer, like navigating. A lot of the vendors of messaging sounds very similar. It is a bit overwhelming. I know Momentum Partners has that slide that has maybe 3,000 vendors. I think I saw as of 2 weeks ago, maybe 800, 900 vendors here. So, you know, call that a quarter-ish of the total industry space. There's a lot going on. I think it is difficult to navigate the messaging and things like that. I don't know. Do you guys have suggestions for people as they're listening to this? Like any pro tips for trying to, I mean, and you, like you guys both have practitioner experience. You've been buyers as well. Like how can people navigate this?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's an interesting thing I've noticed kind of walking around. In years past, there seemed to be a common theme, you know, whether it's XDR or threat intel or what have you. I thought for sure coming into this, it would be AI again, because it did it a couple of years ago. But to your point, there's so much noise. I think I see a lot of XDR, I see a lot of OT. I do see some AI everywhere. So, you know, yeah, walking around, there's so many different things that you got to figure out. I think just got to come into something like this with a use case. You know, if you come in saying, hey, I don't know where to begin, you are going to be lost, you know, with all these vendors here. So I think having a kind of use case, like, what am I trying to solve for? Am I trying to get better visibility? Am I trying to, you know, protect a certain type of asset or even, you know my assets? So I think starting there and then kind of branching off is kind of how, if I was a first timer here, where I would start, just to keep from getting overwhelmed.
One of the things that I really like, and back in the day when I was at Forrester, I was involved with it, is the Innovation Sandbox. Have you guys ever attended the Innovation Sandbox?
That's cool stuff.
The Innovation Sandbox is great because this floor is chaotic, lots of vendors. In the Innovation Sandbox, if you're not familiar with it, you'll have 10 vendors that have been curated by, you know, 4 to 5 panelists, if you will. And it's like Shark Tank, right? They have to go on stage and do a pitch. But what's cool there is they have a small expo floor. And the founders are typically the ones working the booths there. You can ask a lot of questions. So if you didn't attend Innovation Sandbox this year, I would put it on your calendar for next year. Go Monday afternoon. Hidden Layer, speaking of AI, was the winner of it this year. Actually, they're a 1011 portfolio company, like we are at ReliaQuest as well. And they're actually protecting AI models. Was one of the things that they have there. So I do think that probably ties into a little bit of the AI. Maybe the timing is really good for them. There's all this co-pilots, et cetera, happening, and now they provide some security controls around it. But my favorite thing when it comes to vendors here is the Innovation Sandbox, and then making a meeting is what we've all been doing. It's like meeting with our customers, hearing what their problems are, hearing what our opportunities are. Anything, JP, you would add that maybe Joe and I haven't said?
You know, I think Joe got it right. You got to come with a use case, right? If you come here and just want to aimlessly walk the floor and grab tchotchke, like there's plenty of tchotchke to grab. You know, I think the one thing I've always loved doing here is I'll take time to go walk the periphery. I'll walk the outside edges, the smaller booths, the up and comers, those who are in Innovation Sandbox, those who, you know, aren't in the middle, you know, with the rest of it, but are on the edges that, you know, have smaller booths, and figure out what they're doing and seeing if there's any really unique technologies and things like out there that are being innovative and bringing stuff to market that solves some of the problems that I may have.
Yeah, that's a good one as well.
Yeah, always a good time, but yeah, it's chaotic. I think the other thing I'm seeing out here too a lot too is like API security. It seems to be another trend out here where like people are interested in. I think it's probably something that people don't talk about a lot though, is API security and how you're doing it, how you're managing that and keeping those APIs secure, because
it's not the flashy stuff, but certainly important.
Yeah, something you got to have for sure.
Well, even more so now, like if you don't have APIs, you know, that's going to competitively deselect you from a lot of, you know, RFPs that customers are doing, and they want to integrate in. And there's been so much money raised in API. Like, I mean, you have a lot of unicorns in the API security space. In fact, Neosec, who's actually on the floor, they got acquired last week by, I think, Akamai was announced last week. Have you seen any noteworthy announcements from any of our partners that are worth highlighting?
No, I mean, some of the AI stuff has been pretty interesting. You know, obviously, with our efforts that we've been working on for the past 4 or 5 months, I always kind of keep tabs on kind of what people are coming out with. And people have some interesting ideas. So that's something I kind of watch for, is how are people weaving that into their product to make it better? Obviously, it's not going to be replacing all of us anytime soon or any particular product, but you know, how they're using it, what are the interesting use cases? So that's kind of what I look for when I go to see our partners or our tech integration folks that we're working with.
Well, maybe let's dig into AI a little bit, just since we're on that topic. We did an announcement. Was it Friday or was it on Monday? I'm losing track of
Monday.
On Monday of what we're doing. Maybe dig into what we're doing here.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously it's a lot of the things that we're looking at are more of an augmentation. So how do we get, for our GMIA, our intelligent analysis, how do we get that to be more dynamic, right? So instead of relying on static templates or relying on kind of what data we're getting at the mercy of the customer, how do we kind of augment that? How do we make that faster, more consistent? Same with our cyber assessment methodology. That's been a great win for our analysts, you know, as well as our customers for kind of following that. But how do we make that more dynamic?
So what is our, for those that may not know on the podcast, what is our cyber assessment methodology?
Yeah, and this was really kind of Jason's baby from back in the day. But really our cyber assessment methodology is how do we, you know, what's almost like our playbook or our run book for when we get a particular type of alert or we run into certain types of artifacts? How does an analyst work that issue to make sure they're getting the best possible outcome from it? and I'll let you chime in on it since it is your baby.
Yeah, I'm only going to correct one thing. It's cyber analysis methodology, right? How do you drive, the problem we were trying to solve is how do you drive consistent analysis across security operations, regardless of the analyst who's doing it, what time zone, what language they speak, and everything else. And so to Joe's point, we created this framework that says like, hey, this type of alert, if it's malware versus scanning versus something else, you have certain artifacts. How do you investigate those artifacts? If you have an IP address, what do you want to know about that IP address, right? And you're going to, regardless of the tools and technologies, what are the questions that you want to answer around that IP address or that host name or that username or that hash for your investigation? So instead of worrying about training on the tools and the technology, which is always the sexier side, but how do you drive that consistent methodology for how you investigate something so that way it's done consistent every time? And so our customers, in turn, can get a consistent output regardless of who's doing it. And then to Joe's other point as well, taking that and then really kind of automating that, using AI to help kind of drive more value out of that and get more consistency. And it's less things a human have to do, right? And we were talking about before we started recording, but like it's that co-pilot methodology where you can bring something else to sit alongside with us. And so the analysts can kind of read the story that's coming out of AI and other things and then add additional context and oversight to that. And I think that's, you know, really what's made the cyber analysis methodology and our intelligent analysis so successful.
Yeah, and really just AI is kind of the next level of that, right? How do we turbocharge that? How do we take what we've been
doing
for...
So next-gen AI, is that what you're saying? Next year, we're going to be here for next-gen AI?
Yeah, it's already next-gen.
Yeah. You heard it first here. But yeah, so how do we take leverage the power of models like GPT and things like that for kind of just... you know, general security knowledge layered in with our decade plus experience of, you know, threat intel or incident response capabilities and using that data to add better context. So, you know, I think, you know, anybody can plug in kind of a ChatGPT into their product, but they're not getting the benefit or the context of what is the area, you know, what is your expertise as a vendor or as a company layering that in with that. And that's really kind of the true power of AI where we're at.
One of the things I was thinking about for buyers trying to navigate the noise of AI that's been happening is think about outcomes. Like one is what are your models trained on to what you're saying there. But then in addition is kind of what maybe JP said before is like, what are the outcomes? You're on the show floor, what are the outcomes? Same thing with these AI models. What are these? I mean, you know, by Black Hat, probably every single vendor is going to have announced something AI related. So I think it's important for, you know, customers, potential buyers to like, what are the outcomes that are solving? What's demonstrable? How do I get a little bit better at doing X? Because there's going to be so much noise. And it reminds me a little bit of maybe like 10 years ago when ML was super hot and people were talking about the size of their models and their training data. Like we need to understand that, but then you got to move quickly. Like, what would you say you do here? How are you going to help me out?
Models are great. AI is great. ML is great. But if it's not really solving a problem or adding a lot of value to the problem that you're solving, it's like you're just doing it to do it to say you can do it, right? And it's, we see a lot of that across the board. A lot of different techs do that. We've seen companies come and go saying AI is going to solve world hunger and they're going to detect all the bad things on endpoints and stuff like that. Doesn't always happen, right? And just saying you put ML in your product isn't going to sell it either. At least it shouldn't.
So. Yeah, it's got to be actionable. Like if the teams can't use it or leverage that data quickly, like you're just doing it for the sake of doing it.
One of the things on this topic, I've had a couple conversations with customers on it, but I also was walking in between the Moscone centers and ran across a CISO from Dallas that I'm friends with. And his first question to me was like, hey, Rick, do you know anybody that's doing DLP for AI? He's in financial services, and he's like, I don't want to just block it outright, aka Italy, if you will, because we need to be able to do things with it. But their posture was blocking it because they're worried about sensitive data coming out. Are there any strategies that you would recommend, Joe GPT, on that?
Well, it's funny. I just saw that GPT announced that you can kind of have it forget the conversation. So that's one way to help. But you obviously don't want it that information leaked in the first place. One of the tactics that we use is tokenization. So you want the model to know that the context of what you're talking about is still an IP address or still a host name or still a username, but it don't necessarily want it to be my username or my host name. So how do we tokenize that to, you know, replace it with kind of a John Doe or a 1918 space address so that the model still knows, hey, this is an IP address in that context, but we're not accidentally leaking data. So that's kind of a big concern, I think, for most of the customers I've talked to is, hey, is there, we don't really know to the extent of how much they're storing that data on the back end model. I think some of the efforts that they're saying to forget conversations are a good first step, but you know, you got to do your due diligence and make sure you're protecting that as much as possible.
it's not unlike anything else out there, right? You got to protect your data. You got to educate your users. And I hate to be that guy. It's like, you got to educate. Layer 8, it's the human. You got to teach them. But at the end of the day, you can do things internally. You can do things from your systems that you can control. But, like, if people don't understand the threat, whether they're dropping something on Dropbox or Pastebin or in the, you know, opening up their Google Docs to everybody, or, you know, uploading a file to ChatGPT.
S3 bucket. I mean, it's
all, S3 bucket. All you name it, it's all there. It's just another avenue for data to get out there and get leaked. And you got to educate users, like, hey, just because it's, you're asking it a question, it's responding, like, there's still people mining that data on the back end and getting access to documents you're throwing in there now with like GPT-4 and other things. So like, it's just another venue that you've got to, I think, work on the education part. But I think too, if you don't embrace it and you don't allow your users, like all good users, they're going to find a way around it and they're going to do things that you don't want them to do.
Yeah. To your point earlier, Rick, it's DLP. It's just another thing that we need to apply DLP, you know, protection to.
Well, I know we've gone down a little bit of an AI rabbit hole, but I think it's appropriate here. We're seeing some messaging around it, not as much as I thought. It's coming up in conversations with customers. Are there any other, I don't know, maybe any final observations you would make as we kind of wrap up the podcast on trends or recommendations for people to make the most of the event?
No, I think, like I said, just kind of walking around, since there is a little bit of everything, I think it's visibility. That seems to be always the core problem that, you know, all these vendors are here trying to solve, including us, right? Is how do we get that better visibility? How do we see into our OT environments? How do we see into our cloud environments? If we can use all these other tools like AI to help do that faster, more consistent, better quality. Where do we layer in threat intel? Like, all this stuff has to work together. There's a reason why there's, you know, 900 vendors here and, you know, probably 50 different categories. So I think that's, it really all comes down to that, is know your risks for your company and then, you know, use places like RSA to kind of figure out what's there, what's emerging tech, but don't, you know, try to ignore the noise and focus.
You know, I think the customers that we see are the most successful, the ones that just do the basics really, really well. Do the hygiene, do the basics, do the patching, do the visibility. Doesn't mean it's easy, but you get enamored by all the vendors out there and, you know, and they want to all sell you something. And it is what it is, and it's a necessary evil because you need the technologies and the cutting-edge things to help make your jobs more efficient and better. But, I mean, like, if as long as you're doing the basics, right? Detection, investigation, response, it's a basic. Like, you have to do it. There's not a whole lot of frills about it. Like, you can do things to optimize it, to automate it, to make it more efficient and more effective. But start with those basics first. Start with the hygiene things first and focus there. And, you know, then figure out where you need additional techs to be faster, stronger, better. But, you know, getting overly enamored with tools and technologies is just a race to the bottom.
Those come and go, right?
Yep. They come and go each and every time.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. As we wrap up, I guess I want to thank you, Joe Jason, for joining us today. And we're experimenting with this. I think we'll probably do something similar to Black Hat. We may even bring a customer on. I think that would be really nice to have a customer voice for this sort of thing. Actually, we'll probably do this at Exponent, our customer conference. We'll do something from live from the conference as well. So
some man on the street interviews.
Yeah.
Maybe ask the listeners too what they want to, you know, what they're most interested in, some topics or things like that, and maybe, you know, types of CISOs they may want to hear from, and we can make it happen.
Yeah, we want to kind of grow that. So thank you for joining, and thank you everyone for listening. We will still have our regular edition of Shadow Talk that's going to come out on Friday. So stay tuned for that, and thank you for your time.